Hey everyone, it's Billy Morrison and Ozzy Osbourne here. Our new show, The Madhouse Chronicles, is dropping this April. Join us as we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Visit osbournemediahouse.com for early access. What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
You're in the madhouse now.
The Major Spoilers Podcast covers news, reviews, and of course, spoilers, and goes into details about the topics discussed. So if you haven't read, listened, or watched the items we talk about, you might want to come back later.
I'm Matthew.
I'm Rand.
I'm Rodrigo.
And I'm Steven, and you're listening to the Major Spoilers Podcast, the podcast for pop culture and comic fans.
In this issue, we roll a d20 and see which of us is going to talk first. Plus, there's more Lords of the Various Rings a-coming, as well as some new old Buffy, some old new Dragon, and the strange saga of Phantom 309. Now, if you take a look at our weather map tonight, you'll see that we don't have one. But the forecast is about an hour, 10 minutes of awesome, followed by widely scattered light in the morning. It's like my grandpa always used to say, "What the hell is wrong with you?" And also, the Major Spoilers Podcast is on the air.
Welcome to issue 1016 of the Major Spoilers Podcast. Thank you so much for downloading and checking us out this week. Rand is back. Hello, Rand. Welcome back. It's always great to have you here.
Always great to be here.
Yeah. And also Rodrigo and Matthew. Good to have you here as well. Rodrigo Thanks. Was off last week. Good news all around, but you're back. And yep. Why don't we just jump into some news?
Oh, it's me. I'm the news. Okay. I'm off for a week and I'm just completely off my game. Warner Brothers news today. Warner Brothers CEO David Zaslav announced that the studio will make new Lord of the Rings films based on the books by J.R.R. Tolkien. No one has been attached yet, but Peter Jackson and his group have stated that they, quote, have kept us in the loop every step of the way, unquote. Likewise, Amazon Studios head Jennifer Salke feels that there's, quote, there's enough fan love to sustain Rings of Power series for a long time. What will be the first project is still under wraps.
Honestly, people joked when he took over and they were like, oh, yeah, we're going to get more Lord of the Rings and more Harry Potter. Well, here's more Lord of the Rings. And it wouldn't surprise me if there's more Harry Potter around the corner.
Get on the sure things.
I mean, these are the things that made Warner Brothers lots and lots of money. So why not do the same thing again? I just don't know what else you can do with Lord of the Rings. Rand, what can we do with Lord of the Rings?
Well, I get the sense that, you know, the characters and storylines that we didn't see in the Jackson movies are going to...
The Adventures of Tom Bombadil?
I think that's what we're going to get, yeah.
I don't think even Tom Bombadil wants to see the Adventures of Tom Bombadil.
Only if Tom Bombadil was played by Jack Black.
Okay, you sold me.
Yes.
I would watch Tom Bombadil played by Jack Black, or... Weirdly, I would watch Tom Bombadil played by the kid who played Draco Malfoy in the Harry Potter movies. But on the one hand, the giant nerd in me says it's not cool, it's not kosher, it's not all right to make up new stuff in the Lord of the Rings universe. And then on the other hand, Spider-Man exists, and I'm like some of the stuff that we love, you know, like Steven's favorite movie in the whole universe, Spider-Man, something Dark Side. And I love Spider-Man.
Not my favorite movie. It is the definitive greatest superhero movie of all time. Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Right.
Yeah.
Then none of those words mean what you think they mean.
No, it definitely does. And tell me you've not seen Spider-Man in Into the Spider-Verse by telling me that it's not the greatest film of all time. Here's the interesting thing. I mean, a lot of people really complained about the Rings of Power, and the first season, there's a lot of money spent on it and it's interesting, but it's very slow. If anything, I would look at the Rings of Power, and if I were David Zaslav, which I'm not, thank God, I would definitely be saying this is why we don't need to do more Lord of the Rings stuff.
I was going to say, kind of interesting, but slow. I mean, that is the literal definition of Tolkien.
Not in the way that we have to travel 10,000 miles. It is like, let's draw out one scene for an entire episode kind of thing that makes it slow. And it doesn't, the plot of The Rings of Power, they need to speed it up. There's things that they took an entire season to try to tell. That's like, really, instead, I forget how many episodes it was. Let's say it was 8 episodes, or maybe it's 12 episodes. There are plot elements that should have been taken care of in episode 6. So I don't know. Rodrigo, what about you? You are big Lord of the Rings in your household.
But you know, we will not sit down to watch the Hobbit movies. Maybe the first one. I watched Rings of Power. My wife was not interested, and she's the one who like really, really loves the movies.
Mm-hmm.
It was her Thanksgiving tradition to watch all the movies before I showed up and apparently ruined my dog's life. she was not interested at all in watching Rings of Power. I watched the whole thing, and you're right. About 3 things happen in Rings of Power, and it takes an immense amount of time to tell those 3 things. Yeah. And the things that you think are going to happen in Rings of Power don't fully happen.
Yeah, they like happen behind the scenes. 3 things
what you expect happen in Rings of Power, and the things you expect don't fully happen.
Yeah. Rand, did you already share some thoughts, Rand? Sorry.
Yeah, and I'm, you know.
Fine.
Yeah, I'm fine.
I wish Ashley were here, because I know she would have some thoughts. I'm sure she will talk about it very soon in the upcoming Rings of Power articles that she is doing over at Major Spoilers. It's called Let's Get Nerdy, where she just goes into a deep dive about all things Tolkien. And I'm sure this latest round of news will eventually hit. So check Major Spoilers, the website, out for that. Not satisfied with only having one massive verse at Skybound, Robert Kirkman and Lorenzo De Felici have announced Void Rivals, a new shared comic universe launching in June of 2023. Quote, "With every project I do, I'm always trying to challenge myself. One thing I always love during this is starting small with a story and expanding the depth and scope of the stakes as we progress," said Robert Kirkman. "With Void Rivals, we'll be going bigger than I ever have and at a much faster pace. This project is going to be monumental. I can't wait for people to see what Lorenzo and I have cooking," unquote. So this was announced this week. Void Rivals, war rages across the Sacred Ring, where the last remnants of 2 worlds have collapsed around a black hole in a never-ending war. However, when pilot Derek and his rival Solila both crash on a desolate planet, these 2 enemies, mine, must find a way to escape together. But are they alone on this strange planet? Something at the walls when the falls fell. There you go. Are you ready for another big, massive universe, Matthew?
Nope.
Are you? Yeah, why not?
Well, there's a couple of reasons. Primarily, I don't like universes that announce themselves in advance. The thing about the massive verse that worked for me was that we got Radiant Black, and we got about 6 issues of Radiant Black, and people started saying, "Hey, this is cool. I dig this." And then they're like, "Oh, well, we got more where that came from. Here's some Rogue Sun, and here's some Radiant Pink, and here's some Radiant Fuchsia, and throw in a little bit of Radiant Plaid." And it built from that foundation. Whereas, I don't know if you guys remember, a few years ago, Tom Cruise launched the Dark Universe with his version of The Mummy. Yeah. I think it was like, actually, I believe it was The Mummy : Weekend at Bernie's 3. But because they called their shot, because they tried to Babe Ruth it and said, "We're going to build a universe out of this nonsense," I had no interest in seeing The Mummy. And I kind of like, you know, your Universal Studios things. And they're like, "We're going to do a modern Mummy." I'm like, "Oh, I might look at that." And they're like, "Got Tom Cruise." And I'm like, "Oh, there's a point off. And we're doing this. Okay, that's a point off. Where's Brendan Fraser? No Brendan Fraser." And then they said, "Yeah, we're going to launch a whole shared universe." I'm like, "Okay." And then I clocked out, because that's where I clock out. So,
Rodrigo or Rand, guys have any thoughts?
You guys remember CrossGen?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yep.
CrossGen, I really feel like it was, they were like, "Yes, let's make this thing where all of these worlds are their own thing." and like pretty much nothing else. And I think some of the books were okay on their own. But I think the main thing that was hindering them was being part of like this weird shared universe. I don't know. It's been a long time.
Well, there was also the whole, you know, we're a cult thing, but that's another.
Well, but
allegedly.
I think you're both right, though, that there's, you know, it's not that you can't, you know, pre-plan a universe, but it's really hard to do it corporately. And what I mean by that is, like, you know, if one, you know, like something, you know, like obviously like Seven Soldiers, you know, was this, you know, kind of this event with, what was it, like seven different miniseries that was all, you know, kind of tied together, you know, nicely, but it also was, you know, conceived and all written by the same person. Uh-huh. You know, and I think that there's a difference there that, you know, what we're talking about, you know, this, you know, when a universe kind of happens organically, it's nice because what you have is a lot of different writers working in their own world and then realizing, oh, we can connect these things. There's that excitement. But yeah, I think it's harder to, you know, to just kind of make an announcement like, oh, we're going to create a universe and then expect it all to just kind of come together, you know, and just kind of wing it.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes. Matthew, wrap us up this week with the news.
All right. So out there in the universe, which may or may not be shared, the Expanse series is over, maybe over, at Amazon Studios. The stories will be continuing in a new series from Boom Studios. The Expanse : Dragontooth launched a Kickstarter in February, which I guess technically it's still February now, but it won't be by the time you hear this. Hello, future people. In their first day, they raised record-breaking numbers, $3,402.214. No, $342,214. That's a comma, not a period, Matthew. Making the comic book publisher's biggest Kickstarter since the previous Kickstarter campaign for Keanu Reeves' Berserker. Boom describes the 12-issue series as filling in the missing years between The Expanse, Babylon's Ashes, and The Expanse, Persepolis Rising. So it's kind of a secret history of all the characters that you know and you love, and it's going to be revealed for the very first time,
I know a lot of people are big fans of The Expanse. I just never could get into it. I'm glad that everybody got the series that they got out of Amazon, and here's the way that they can continue it. Now, the interesting thing is that I have a feeling that The Expanse Dragonstooth would have been released through Boom Studios even without the Kickstarter. But I think the Kickstarter, and this is kind of weird, but it seems like a lot of companies, especially gaming companies, are going to board game companies, not video game companies, that they're going to Kickstarter as a way to do pre-orders on stuff. And certainly there are companies that are doing that with Indiegogo. Dynamite does that with Indiegogo. I think Top Cow does some stuff with Indiegogo or Kickstarter, I forget which one, as kind of a way to generate interest and to try to get a bunch of pre-sales going on so they can judge just how big this is so that we can then release it to the comic book market later on, which is what happened with Berserker. And that's gone on to be, you know, a massive success and is becoming a movie. I can't remember if it's a movie or a TV series. And so that's been very successful for them. Maybe this is a way to for Boom to obviously make some money off The Expanse, but maybe make it big enough to where there might be enough fan engagement to get Jeff Bezos to crack open his wallet for another season of The Expanse TV series. I don't know. Are you guys fans of The Expanse, Rand?
You know, I have not watched it, you know, so it's one of those, one of many shows that are kind of like on the pile, but I haven't really gotten to it.
Yeah. Rodrigo, you ever watch the shows or read the books?
Yeah, I watched the entirety of the Expanse show, and of course, my dogs are big fans of The Expanse because I used to, back when we used to live, they could hear noises from outside, and it would make them really nervous. So when I left the house, I would just leave The Expanse playing them, and you know, it was good because they were calmer. But also, anytime I tried to like take them to the vet, they'd be like, "Oh, bus mang bum bat, you trying to no, I'm not gonna do it."
I know Scott Johnson is a huge fan of this series. He goes off about it every time I talk about it. Jason Inman is also a huge fan of The Expanse. So I know that there are, and especially if you're bringing in $342,000 on the first day of your Kickstarter campaign for a comic book, that's kind of a big deal. So good luck, Boom Studios. Dear listeners, you can join the conversation about these stories and more over on our Discord server. You can join the Major Spoilers Discord server for free, and we would love to see you join our growing community of awesome spoilerites. That's right. If you want to be an awesome spoilerite, you need to join our Discord server. There's a link in the show notes. There's cat gifts waiting upon your arrival. Very good with the news. Let us do some reviews. Oh, let's see. Rodrigo all the win. March 22nd, this guy.
It's almost March.
Yes, it is.
Already is March, right?
Which is why I'm going to be talking about Buffy, the Vampire Slayer special from Boom Studios. This is a double-sized 64-page thing. It's an $8 comic. This is set in the future of an alternate Buffyverse where Buffy is older. Tara and Willow are quote-unquote dead, but they have a daughter, and Buffy has been training her as the new, what is it, the Watcher, and also who's a Spike is also still around, hanging around with Buffy and encouraging her. Thess, which is the daughter of Tara and Willow, she is obsessed with the fact that Tara disappeared and is presumed dead, and she is trying to be the best new vampire slayer she can, but she can't get it quite right. And the story sends them across the globe from England out to the deserts of America, where they need to fight some vampire things and go into the light and a bunch of other things. So here's the thing. One of the things that was great about Buffy the Vampire Slayer is it was, you know, dealing with scary monster stuff, but with teens. And there was also a lot of soap opera stuff to it. One of the drawbacks of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the television series, is oftentimes you would spend a lot of time talking about nothing, which sometimes dragged the story down quite a bit. I feel like Buffy the Vampire Slayer special has a bunch of side talk stuff that is not necessarily integral to the main story that seems to slow the book down to the point where, even though we're getting a lot of pages of comics, makes me really question of whether this should be an $8 book, or maybe there could have been some editing to tighten up some of the slower bits. Not saying remove them completely, but tighten up some of the slower bits and not repeat some of the things that happened two or three times, so that by the time you get to the end of the story, you feel a little bit more satisfied. The art is fine from Joe Jaro. The writing from Casey Gilley is also fine. I just feel like it needs to be tightened a little bit to make it a little bit more to keep the pace going. There's not a whole lot of Buffy stuff out there right now, except for what Boom is doing. And so I understand that you want to try to, I don't want to milk it for all it's worth is not the right word to use, but you're trying to give fans everything that they want with Buffy. And so I think this does it, but a 50 plus year old Buffy and, you know, as the Watcher and this other girl who not only is she the next Slayer, but she's also got magical powers from Willow is also an interesting twist. I just wasn't completely sold on it. And so my overall impression is it's good. I just wanted it to be a little bit better. And so I can only give this 3.5 slices of meatloaf out of 5. Buffy the Vampire Slayer special is out this week, and you can go pick it up if you want to spend $8 on the comic book. Also out this week is Image Comics' Savage Dragon 264 from Eric Larson and Eric Larson.
Eric Larson.
Because I think Eric Larson Nick. Also serves as his own editor on this, so...
Yeah, but somebody named Nick does the lettering. And I have to tell you, you guys.
Oh, my gosh.
I love a hate relationship.
Oh, okay. You dropped off for a second.
Oh, I'm sorry. Am I back?
Yeah.
Test? Mm-hmm. 1, 2. Okay. Many a time I've said that I have a love-hate relationship with Eric Larson's Savage Dragon. And it's true. And then I get to an issue like this. And I say to myself, this is pure comics. This is not necessarily a great comic, not necessarily a world-breaking comic, but it's almost the platonic ideal of comics. And the reason for that is that the Savage Dragon, and you may know this, this is actually famous, was based on a character that Eric created when he was 9 years old. In the year 1982, he created the Savage Dragon, and he created just pages and pages of homemade comics that he stapled together and drew himself and wrote himself. And then he became a professional, and then he, you know, helped launch Image, and then he launched a new and different Savage Dragon. And over the course of the last, oh dear Lord, 30 years, just hit me with a stick right now. Over the last 30 years, Eric has been drawing and writing Savage Dragon every month and building on this world, worlds, universe, shared universe, whatever you want to call it. And he's restarted reality at least three times. And recently, the current dragon, who is Malcolm, the son of the Savage Dragon who started Image Comics Savage Dragon back in 93, has been the central character. And he has bumped into an alternate reality version of his dad called Paul. This issue is the story of Paul. And the story of Paul is the comic books that Eric Larson wrote and drew when he was 9. So what we are seeing is a 53-year-old creator taking the comic books he wrote that he was 9, taking all of that agglomerated nonsense, putting it together with a universe that he has been writing professionally, drawing professionally for 30 years, making everything that he did in these comics when he was a kid, all the way up to the creepy stuff, the stupid stuff, the fact that the dragon married a stripper who had an identical twin sister, all of the things that are probably some subtle copyright infringement issues. There's a character in here called Sergeant Marvel. But Sergeant Marvel isn't what you think. He's actually the world's greatest detective, and he has a big cowl with points on top. It's a whole thing.
Nice.
Basically, what you expect from a 9-year-old. Weird fights, strange plot twists, crazy stupidness, weird quasi-sexual stuff that you look at it and you go, the person that wrote this was either 9 or really needs to get a life. And by the end of the issue, he has taken all of this stuff and a couple of stories that he actually put out as an adult professional writer featuring Paul Dragon and has now created this and tied it all up in a bow and canonically given us the alternate universe version of this dragon. So what this has been is a 264-issue, 30-year project to put together the framework, the necessary, you know, kind of external, I don't know, for lack of a better word, just like a gantry to which he could launch as an adult the comic that he wrote as a kid and give it to fans who've been reading Savage Dragon and having this love-hate relationship for 30 years. I almost don't want to give this a Meatloaf rating because in the strictest possible sense, it's kind of not a good comic. And yet, I love the chutzpah that is behind this. And I really sit here and I feel like adult Eric Larson, this is his masterstroke. This is what he's been building to for 30 years. And if you have been reading Savage Dragon regularly, you definitely want this issue. If you drop in every once in a while and then drop out, I think you want to read this issue. If you're somebody who only remembers Savage Dragon from 1993, you probably want to read this issue. This is really, really weirdly good. It's like a dumb joke that comes back around and is so wonderful and so perfectly rendered that you're just like, this is perfect. I have to give it 5 slices of meatloaf. It's not the comic that I want to give 5 slices of meatloaf to, but I can't not. Just the scope of this is so amazing that I'm almost at a loss for words. I said almost. And of course, you know,
yeah,
drawn by Eric and written by Eric.
Yeah.
And Eric by Eric.
We've got one more comic that's coming out this week. Well, there's a lot of comics coming out this week. But Rand, you're taking a look at Phantom Road number one from Image Comics.
Yes. Yes, I am. Yeah, Phantom Road number one it's a new horror comic with art by Gabriel H. Walta, who is probably most known for illustrating Tom King's Vision series. Written by Jeff Lemire, who's most known for writing every third comic you've read over the last 15 years or so. They previously worked together on the TKO series Sentient. Actually, I think it might have been a standalone graphic novel, Sentient, which was excellent, and they worked on that together. This essentially is a story. What happens in the first issue is you've got a long-haul trucker who stops to help a woman who's been in an accident. Then they find something weird at the site of the wreck, and then the ungodly monsters attack. You know, that's pretty much what you get. The characters, and this, you know, Dom is, you know, the long-haul trucker is a brooding, tough guy haunted by his past, and Birdie, you know, is, you know, younger, more innocent, but also more open and, you know, willing to kind of go with the flow in terms of all the real weird, surreal things that are happening to them. Which is to say they're straight out of horror story central casting, which is, I think, a good thing because we learn so little about the capital S story in this opening chapter. Well, let's talk about the art a little bit. If you're familiar with Walta, he's a great artist and he's absolutely wonderful and used really well in this. Both the storytelling and the visuals, including the colors by Jordi Belair, are pretty much perfect. This is the kind of story visually that comics are for, as far as I'm concerned. You know, I mean, the art is absolutely great. I will say that, like, this issue kind of reads like a pre-credit sequence, meaning that it's exciting, but it's not particularly forthcoming. It feels like this is a story that's clearly kind of written for the trade, meaning that, like, you know, I'm not really clear on what's happening, but the tone is pitch perfect. Tonally, this is great. It's exciting. It's intriguing. In the first issue, it's kind of all questions, no answers. I think, you know, last week we were talking about the idea that streaming services are getting good at dropping the number of episodes that they think they need to hook you.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
This, you know, unfortunately, comics can't do that. And also, unfortunately, with comics, you are paying by the chapter. True. And so, you know, I feel like I personally have great faith in Jeff Lemire. So I will certainly continue to read this, but I'll probably wait for the trade. Because I feel like it's something that's going to read better if I, you know, read it, you know, if not the whole thing, at least read, like, you know, a story, you know, story arc at a time. And so with that in mind, I'm giving it 3 out of 5 slices. Again, only because there are so many unanswered questions, and I give it 3 out of 5, fully expecting that when I read this as the first chapter in a completed novel or first chapter of a completed storyline, my rating will be higher.
Okay. Again, Jeff Lemire, I think, is a great writer. I would agree on your assessment that his stuff tends to read better in a trade than in a issue-to-issue basis, from my experience. Only because there's a lot of those unanswered questions that...
If I was picking this up and I didn't know anything about the writer, you know, and given that it's $4 an issue or whatever, you know, I'm not sure I would pick up more simply because, like, yeah. I said, it's nothing wrong with this. It's really good.
Yeah.
But, it doesn't, like I said, it feels like would be a great hook if it was a credit sequence for an episode or for a movie that I was already committed to watching the rest of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, you know, it's weird because it's a complaint that I probably would never make if I was reading this as a graphic novel collection and this was the first chapter.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So,
yeah. All right. Very good. Thank you. Finally, Rodrigo, who jumps all the way ahead to March 22nd. XO Man of War Unconquered number one.
XO Man of War Unconquered number one. It is the hang on to your butts 30th anniversary of XO Man of War. Everything is 30 because we started in the 90s. I think.
Speak for yourself.
I'll count it later. No, the universe started in the 90s. That's why Savage Dragon had all those adventures, because he had to start the universe. Another 90s guy, Exo Man of War, has had a long and storied comic book history, most of which I have not read. I'm not very familiar with it. So I came in and I saw that this is the 30th anniversary and they're kickstarting a new, not actual Kickstarter. I mean, they're starting a new story. And I was like, hey, maybe this is that fabled jumping on point. I don't think that's the case. I read through this and I'm like, I get things from context. But there's not a lot of explaining here. There's not a lot of, you know, when you want a jumping on point, you kind of have to baby the reader a little bit and tell them what's happening. This does not tell you what's happening. This assumes familiarity with Exo Man of War and his talking armor and his sword of fire. That doesn't mean it's not good. It has a... Liam Sharp is doing the art, and it has that sort of like kind of not super crisp, like painted style, kind of like, you know, later on we're going to be talking about dye. So it's a similar idea where the lines are very soft. You don't have that like classic comic book, like hard black outline to things. It's fine because you very rarely need to, in this comic, get in, like just truck into somebody's face to see how they're emoting, because most of the emotions here are like guys screaming in rage. So that's okay. But this style, like this style is a compromise, right? It gives you this dark, dreamlike quality at the expense of maybe, you know, if somebody comes to me and was like, can you draw, you know, in your own way, the face of the main character, I'd be like, well, I know it's a square, you know, but that's about it, right? There's kind of like this loss of like features and things like that, which again, you know, it's like painted, dramatic lighting, big like set piece, backgrounds and things like that. I think for some people, as I'm saying this, they're like, oh, that's the kind of comic book that I don't like. And I think for other people, they're listening to this and they're like, great, fantastic. That's precisely the sort of comic that I can get into. It is. It's like a... Definitely, like, I don't want to say that it's controversial, right? But this is a style, like, there's an established style in comics, just like thick brushstroke, kind of dark stuff. But it fits because Exo Man of War is thick and dark. This doesn't come out for a few weeks, so I don't want to spoil anything too much. I'm going to give it 3.5 slices of meatloaf. Again, coming in, not knowing much about it, it's not hard to get on board with what's happening. There's lots of like character conversations where you can, from context, figure out what all is going on. I'm not like knocking it down for not being beginner friendly. It's not, but if you were reading comics, or if you've been reading comics, chances are you've jumped into the middle of something before and figured it out from context. So this isn't this isn't that hard. 3.5 slices of meatloaf. Art is good. Story's good. Check it out.
Very good. Thank you so much for that, Rodrigo and Rand and Matthew. And dear listener, if you want even more reviews, make sure you head over to majorspoilers.com, where we've got reviews up pretty much every day. And also, I should say, if you want to know what are the big stories over at Major Spoilers, then you need to sign up for the Major Spoilers mailing list, the newsletter that we send out every day, except I think on Saturday we don't send it out. But every morning in your email box, you can open it up and you will find link to all of the big stories that we had on the site throughout the day, our big reviews, big stories that are covered on the site, and a whole lot more. You can find a link over at Major Spoilers. You just scroll over. If you're on your phone, scroll down to the bottom because that's where the right column stuff is at the bottom of the page. Or if you're on the website, just scroll down into the preview section in the right column. You'll see a little button that says join the Major Spoilers email list. All that stuff will come to you every morning. And then every Sunday, we will send you a link to all the podcasts that we released during the week. It's a lot of good stuff in there if you're looking for the best of the best over at majorspoilers.com.
92% of households that start the year with Peloton are still active a year later.
92% because of a bike?
Not just bikes. We also make treadmills and rowers.
Oh, let me guess, for elite athletes only, right?
Nope. It doesn't matter if you're an avid exerciser or new to working out. Peloton can help you achieve your fitness goals. 92% stick with it. So can you. Try Peloton bikes, tread, or row risk-free with a 30-day home trial. New members only. Not available in remote locations. See additional terms at onepeloton.com/home-trial.